Today's segment is the story of an 18-year-old boy who joined the Royal Navy towards the end of the Second World War to fly as a telegraphist air gunner. Born on the 18th of August 1925, Anthony Johnson had already valiantly served with the ARP, Air Raid Precaution Wardens, rescuing people from bombed buildings during the Blitz. Growing up as a child performer on the stage and on the screen, his story is even more amazing as he comes in the top group of the TAG trainees and is sent to Canada to further his training. This is my dad's interview. Today I'm with Anthony Johnson, Petty Officer and Telegraphist Air Gunner. So you volunteered to join the Navy when you were 17 and you went in when you were 18.
Correct. To go a little bit before that, I was working in a factory in Wood Lane. It happened to be Fairey Factory, and that happened to make albacores, parts for the Spitfires, and barracudas. Little did I know I was making things that perhaps I'd fly in later. Although I was only 14, they asked me, would I do night work? Which was completely illegal, but that's the war. So there was I, on night work, doing riveting of Spitfire frames, barracudas and bits of albacore during the Blitz.
And so you started your flying training with the Air Training Corps, and your first flight was in a Tiger Moth.
That's right, that's correct, in Southend. I always remember it was quite exhilarating and everything like that. And they taught me a lot in the ATC.
Contact!
Well, it was quite interesting because I got my papers, because on the papers and my railway warrant, it said HMS Royal Arthur. So we got on the train, and when we got to Skegness, we got off, and there was this lorry with tarpaulin over it. We all got on the lorry, great expectations, and it went along the seafront, and we were looking for the battleship, or whatever it was, HMS Skegness. Then all of a sudden, it turned into HMS Royal Arthur Butlins Holiday Camp. We did initial training there. We went to HMS St Vincent, which was in Gosport. And there you had the basics of flying. And then because I was going to be a telegraphist air gunner, you had to learn the basic of telegraphy, electron theory, electromagnetic theory, and so on.
And what made you choose being a telegraphist air gunner?
It just appealed because I'd seen a poster and it had this picture of the telegraphist air gunner with his flying helmet on with his machine gun pointing to the sky. And I thought that looked a good old job, firing out in the blue. So I decided for that.
And once you'd done your training in Gosport, you went off to Canada, to the Royal Navy Telegraphist Air Gunner School at Yarmouth.
That's right. Going through America first and at Yarmouth. Anyway, we looked out in the harbour and there was this grey ship with, I believe, two funnels at the time. And they said, you know what that is? Which turned out to be the Queen Elizabeth.
We send forth upon her mission this noble ship.
And lo and behold, because the American gun crews were so tired going backwards and forwards, they put us on watch. Well, I'd never been near a gun before. And there we were, at night, reporting the North Star as enemy aircraft. It was complete chaos. How we weren't sunk, I don't know.
So you're training in at Yarmouth. And so you went from no flying to flying, gunnery practice, radio practice.
That's right. The airfield was huge. And we had Sawfish, Avro Anson's, and Avro Oxford's.
Can you just tell us what a telegraphist air gunner does?
Well, in the Sawfish, you had a pilot, an observer, and a telegraphist air gunner. Yeah, obviously, the air gunner was a gunner. And he looked round, he had this gun, which was a Vickers gas-operated gun, which was useless, you know. But there again, one of the chaps apparently shot down one of the first planes of the war, and he was either in a skewer or a swordfish.
And what was it like? Everyone will want to know what it's like to sit in the back seat of a swordfish.
Very, very cold. You used to get what they call silk gloves. Well, if you ever tried to write with silk gloves and tap out moles, it's diabolical. So nobody ever used to wear them. They used to wear the silk scarf you was given, because it always used to look smart. Silk scarf flying behind you.
So it must have been pretty uncomfortable up there.
Uncomfortable. But you can just imagine that flying suit trying to move around in a very confined cockpit. So nobody used to wear it.
So what was your first flight in a swordfish like?
Well, in a swordfish, you had to hold everything down, because you had what they call a G-string, and that clipped on the back of your harness. And some idiots never used to clip this on. So when the pilot decided to do flips and God knows what, they nearly went over the side. But the thing was, there was a chap called Sergeant Silk, and he was a Royal Canadian Air Force pilot that was seconded to our base. And he was a very venturesome chap. He's hard to somersault an Avro Anson. And if you ever see an Avro Anson, you know that was disastrous. And one day, there used to be two of us. He was in one seat in the plane, and I was on the usually on the back seat of the plane. And we were tapping away. You had to do your position every quarter of an hour or 20 minutes. Send it through where your position was. One day we were flying around, and we both looked up, and Holston nearly jumped out of his chair, because there was the pilot, Sergeant Sick, going down to the rear of the plane. They did have autopilot, but we didn't know it was an autopilot. So, you know, he saw us looking very dazed and bewildered. He said, "Go on, take over." And I got up. I didn't know what I was doing, and sat in the pilot seat. He came behind me. He said, "Put your feet in the stirrups." He said, "And there's the control column." He said, "Now fly." And there was me, petrified, holding the stick forward. He leapt forward and said, "No, do this." And there we were flying and doing side slips and God knows what. And me sitting in the pilot seat, petrified.
So you got some pilot in command time.
That's right.
You had the role as a gunner, but also the telegraphist air gunner. So that's radio and navigation.
Radio, and you had a Wurlitzer set, which was diabolical. And you had coils which you had to put in, and you had to know what certain coils you have, and you had to know to let your aerial out, because we used to work on lower frequencies. The Americans later worked on higher frequencies, which was wonderful. When we went over to Barracudas, we used to have what they call crystal calibrated sets. And they were hand calibrated. So when you got a frequency, you knew it was dead on. But with the frequency you got, you traded about 100 yards of trailing aerial, and they had lead beads on the end, which flew out the back. And you had to be very, very careful it didn't get in what they call the oleo wheel. And that was the back wheel. So you always had to tell the pilot when it was reeled in.
And in Yarmouth, you flew the Swordfish and the Barracuda?
No, the Barracudas weren't there. It was Swordfish. They didn't have any albacores there. They had Swordfish, Avro Anson and Oxford.
And you got to do your gunnery practice in Yarmouth. What was it like firing for the first time?
Well, what they used to... Everyone was looking forward to this. And what they used to have a swordfish that used to have what they call a drogue. And they used to let it out with a long length of line, so that any gunner, who we all had good eyesight because you had to pass the eyesight test, but who was a little bit flimsy on the trigger, didn't shoot their tailplane off. I turned out to be an ace hot sharpshooter with the guns. But with a shotgun, I couldn't hit the side of a wall. And why that was, I don't know.
You were in Canada until 1944, and then you came back to the UK to 713 Squadron?
Yeah, and I begged him, can I go on operational squadron? So eventually I ended up in the Isle of Man, and so we were assigned to Barracuda. At that time we were on 713, and it was semi-operational. And what that means is you're preparing to go on an operational squadron.
So from 713 Squadron with Anson, you did your bombing practice and so forth. What was that like, dropping bombs?
Well, that was quite interesting because day and night they had what they call a leeward weight, which was like, I would say, nearly as big as this room, a sort of platform which they pulled behind a ship on the cable. It used to go up and down under the waves and come up. Just like perhaps a submarine would. You bombed it with these bombs. At night, you want to see where the bombs go, so you used to use the magnesium bombs. So coming back, this was the daytime, coming down, and I looked out, and we're getting ready to land. And I'd had about 200 or 300 feet of training area with all these lead balls on the end. And all of a sudden, crash, it went across, because there was a road at the side. And there was my training area going through bushes and everything and wrapping itself around the rear wheel leg. I was sweating, and if anyone had been going past on this road, it would have just sliced through them. Because we got out and looked at the leg, and I thought, somebody's going to be court-martialed over this. But we got away from that.
And the Barracuda, what was that like to fly in? Was it a nice stable plane? Or
it was a death trap. In the Isle of Man, they were doing bombing practice, and a friend of mine, who was on the course with me, he was the air gunner on it, and they went, the wing folded back and it went straight in. After the war, they made a mention that the strap they were using clipped the wing in and made it safe. They were using inferior metal. So this could have been the case where the metal snapped.
And the wings folded on the Barracuda, so literally it folded in flight.
Yeah, the wing folded and everything. And then, of course, you've got no chance. You go straight in.
And so then you got to go to an operational squadron, which was 822 Squadron?
That's right. And because squadrons have been taken off aircraft carriers, we went to RAF base. What they call ASBU, anti-small battle units. Well, we didn't mind because you come on more or less RAF discipline rather than Navy discipline, which is always different.
And was the discipline different between the RAF and the Navy?
Completely different. I mean, you try to walk around in the Navy on a carrier or anything like that with your flying boots on, your scarf on, and an Irving jacket on, swaggering around. You wouldn't get far, you'd be on commander's report. But in there, you could.
So 822 Squadron was doing coastal command activities. What sort of things were you doing?
Because they thought that they're 1- and 2-man submarines. They'd heard about it from either the French resistance, that they were trying to build these things. And also, E-boats were hovering around. So they were laying mines, and we had to look out for mines. I managed to have a good few shots at mines. I don't think I ever sunk one, but I had a good go.
You also used to patrol down by the Channel Islands.
That's right. Obviously, it wasn't in our permit to fly over the Channel Islands.
Because they were occupied by the Germans.
So when we used to flip round and get nearer that nice little fort that was on the beach, he used to say to the pilot, by the way, have you noticed them ripples down by the starboard wing? And they used to fire these Oerlikon cannons. And because we were about 100 feet off the sea, you could see the ripples coming up.
So the Germans were firing at you?
Oh, yeah. I later visited the fort where the Hurricane cannons were on. They used to take pot shots of this. And we didn't actually put our fingers up to our nose, but we really shouldn't have done that. Tempt them and everything like that.
And from your logbook, around this time, you were flying Ansons, Swordfish and Barracudas.
No, just Barracudas.
Just Barracudas.
Our squadron, by the time we got on it, they got rid of the Swordfish and we were on these Barracudas. And it was quite nice going on Thorn Patrol, because what we used to do is go in the canteen and there was nice bacon and eggs served up by the Italians who used to be prisoner of wars. And we used to have our bacon and eggs and go on Dawn Patrol.
And so you came to the end of your service, the war ended, and you carried on serving until June 1946?
That's right. I was at Lee and Soane at the time. And they asked me specially whether I wanted to stay in. I wanted to stay in the fleet era, but anyway, they put my arms behind my back and come out.
And so some of your memories are fond ones and some not so fond. What do you take from all of that?
Oh, I learned a lot. I learned about camaraderie. I learned about always trying to do your best at the time. And the greatest thing, I think, was I made my father proud. And he was very, very proud. The thing that I always loved the Navy, even now, I go around, I've got my badge on my blazer, and I'm always so proud when somebody asks me.
Well done, Dad.
Thanks very much.
You can find me at Mascot Hornet on Twitter and at alphatangopapa.blogspot.com. This is Peter Johnson, reporting for the Airplane Geeks from across the pond.